And welcome again, everyone, here on this morning. How many of you have heard of cancel culture? Okay, most of you. It's something I had not heard about until, maybe 4 years ago when I was in West Seattle. This morning, I'd like to invite us to consider how pervasive this idea of canceling people because of their words and actions have become. And that also includes contemporary Unitarian Universalism. And the second part of it is, are there ways for people who have been canceled to redeem themselves in society or with those who have followed them because they believed that they were, if not perfect, close to it? So what is cancel culture and why is it important? Here's one definition I read this week, and I'll repeat it twice. Cancel culture is the phenomenon of eliminating support for those people who have done something offensive or whose ideologies are inappropriate in the public eye. Cancel culture is the phenomenon of eliminating support for those people who have done something offensive or whose ideologies are inappropriate in the public eye. For another perspective on this, here was a commentator, a very lesser known commentator on Fox News, who commented on the dangers of cancel culture. They said, "You see people who deep inside feel a certain way, but they are afraid to say it because they are afraid they will be shamed, that they will be excluded, that they won't be promoted. They may be called transphobic, they may be called homophobic, they may be called racist, so it keeps people quiet." Now, I don't know about you, When I first looked at this commentary and I looked where it was from and I saw Fox News, my immediate reaction was, oh, I'm not going to use them, they lie anyway. That's cancel culture right there. I'm not saying it's good or bad, it just is. Where we've made a stand, I'm not going to listen to them because they are wrong. Now, the temptation to cancel someone because of their words or actions isn't limited to one side of the political spectrum. It doesn't even have to be about individuals. I remember a number of years ago when a famous nationwide fast food chicken restaurant chain donated to religious organizations that were anti-LGBTQ+. And there was an outcry to boycott the restaurant chain by people on the liberal side of the political spectrum. The restaurant chain soon backtracked and offered to donate to organizations working on homelessness and anti-racism. The reaction among many was to ignore the efforts of the company and say very clearly they won't change, they're just doing this for face-saving measures because they want to still get their money. So therefore, the boycott would continue. And that suggested in turn that redemption for that particular company was impossible. Oftentimes, cancel culture involves famous people, including admired celebrities. A well-known Buddhist teacher named Noah Levine created a radically new way to understand Buddhist teachings in the West. He was a former addict and had spent some years in prison, addicted to heroin and a number of other drugs. He learned meditation partly from his father and eventually was given permission to teach the Dharma by his teacher, Jack Kornfield, in California. And Jack Kornfield is one of the most famous Buddhist teachers in the world, by the way. Noah's memoir, his first book called Dharma Punks, was an introduction to a younger audience on how meditation could help people recover from addictions. He later founded Refuge Recovery and Against the Stream recovery groups worldwide, along with recovery centers to help people not only recover, but heal from addiction. He was also one of the founders of the Buddhist Recovery Network, which is a worldwide organization to support Buddhist students and teachers in recovery. Now, what I'm going to say to you now is in the public domain. In other words, it's all out there to read if you wish. There are some confidential issues that I will not say to anyone, and I'll explain. I was on the Buddhist Recovery Network Board of Directors, and this was in 2019, when we heard that the Los Angeles police were investigating allegations that Nora Levine had inappropriate and non-consensual sexual relationships with younger women. Soon, his permission to be a Buddhist teacher was withdrawn. The organizations he founded disowned him. Now, I should say here that I've met Nora Levine a number of times over the years at conferences and in meetings. He's a charismatic and has a quite forceful personality. He said that one of his appeals, and he said this, was his willingness to challenge Buddhist teaching orthodoxy in the West, and indeed he did. But he also said in a recent interview that, quote, the Buddhist mainstream establishment is out to get me, unquote, because of those allegations. Now, I can't speak to the allegations against him. What our board learned is still mostly confidential. What I will say is Nora is one of those larger-than-life personality types. I suspect that his success became addictive and his ego got the better of him. He has disagreed with the conclusions of the investigations. He has refused to give up teaching and blamed it all on the hashtag MeToo movement. What I can say in confidence is that his actions have damaged the recovery of many people who believed in him and his stories. His refusal to take responsibility for his failings has hurt the reputation of American Buddhism, especially for younger people. And I would also add here that there are many other Buddhist teachers since the 1960s who have been what they call disrobed or not allowed to teach anymore because of sexually inappropriate relations with their students. Is Nora Levine beyond redemption? What about the history of slave owners who were among the most respected founders of the American Republic? Or what about our ancestors who directly or indirectly benefited from slavery? And I would add here a number of Unitarian churches in New England and Massachusetts relied indirectly on the slave trade to be able to continue in business. So what about those ancestors who we have admired for many, many years? Do their lofty values that they gave to us, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, and so on, does it mean nothing because they believed that blacks, American Indians, and women were subhuman or without any rights at all? Are they beyond redemption? Unitarian Universalism has those people also who have been banished or canceled because of their words and actions. Reverend Todd Eckhoff, who is a minister at the Spokane, Washington Unitarian Universalist Church, was on the receiving end of cancellation and banishment. And this would have been in 2019. Several years ago, our annual General Assembly was in Spokane, and Reverend Eckhoff distributed a book of essays called The Gadfly Papers. that expressed deep concern about the future of Unitarian Universalism. It created quite the uproar there. I wasn't there, by the way, but it created enormous uproar, and he was censored and later defellowshipped, a form of excommunication, from the UUA. He, however, continues as minister of the Spokane Church, and I would note that I have been in contact with Todd as well as others involved in this conversation to provide pastoral support over the last several years. The circumstances of that General Assembly and his censoring are too long to share here today. It would be a service all of itself. I would say that there are some good reasons why the authorities in the UUA did what they did to cancel him. I don't believe it was the right solution, but there are some good reasons, and I cannot go into those now. But is Todd beyond redemption? Or is it possible that Unitarian Universalism is moving beyond the worship of individualism toward a deeper sense of community, accountability, and covenant? And you are going to continue to hear about that in coming years, I suspect. But are we moving beyond the worship of individualism? Because that has been very much part of our vocabulary, our ethics, and our values for many, many years. Does that apply to us all? Well, one question that we should ask ourselves is, have we ever done or said things that hurt others' feelings or caused harm? Do we still carry those in our memories and hearts? Have we created harm or hurt others that still remain in our hearts? I know I do. Cancel culture has become so powerful that 70% of Republicans and Democrats say they would not want to have a person from the other political party live next door or be in a relationship with them or come to Thanksgiving dinner. 70%. What does that tell us? It tells me, at least, that there's something fundamentally broken in this country, with some people saying one thing and other people saying another thing, and the two groups unable to really speak or, more importantly, listen to one another. And by the way, this did not start with the last president. Bill Bishop wrote a book called The Big Sort in 2008 about liberals and conservatives clustering in different parts of the country. Progressive people moving to the cities and more conservative people staying or moving to the country or small towns. This has been happening for over 30 years. And what seems to be going on is a fundamental realignment of American values. We're talking about race. We're talking about what Karen Carnahan talked about last week, white supremacy. All of the values that we may have taken for granted our entire lives and our parents and grandparents now are in a stage of discernment. Because what we are being told by those who have been powerless for so many years is that the people who were the founders weren't perfect. They were flawed, just like we are. But coming back to redemption, what do we do about people like Todd or Nora or many others who we may know or not know? How can they be redeemed and be admired again for their teachings or the gifts that they have given to us, as well as the terrible stories of what they have done? I think if it can be done, it is a long and arduous path. For Noah, who is really the only one who I've talked about who I really know fairly well, and I would say probably Todd Eckhoff as well, If there had been an effort to take responsibility and say, yes, what I did was wrong, and this is how I'm going to resolve it and make sure that I come back into right relationship with those persons and with everyone. But that hasn't happened yet. But what about redemption? What about redemption for all of us, or those of us who need it? And I know that I certainly do, because I look back at my life and go, why did I do that? And I've never been able to really resolve it. But what I have done, as just one example, is I've followed the 12-step model of recovery during the course of my life. It's not perfect by any means, but it does give any of us, I think, regardless of whether we're addicts or in recovery or a Christian or whatever we might be, it does give a path back to wholeness. We review our personal history, and we make an inventory of those times when we have hurt others, either directly or indirectly. It has become more common in recent years to do not only an inventory of the harmful things we have done, but also do a inventory of those actions we've done to help and care for others. Because if we do just one and not the other, it's very tempting to go back into addiction again if we look at the list of how we have harmed people. So we try to balance that out. And then those inventories, we share them with another person who we trust. And that is a reason to be able to move beyond ourselves, our egos. And if we talk to someone who we trust and say, I'd like to share this story with you, oftentimes we will find out that the other person says, oh, yeah, I did that too. Which says we're not alone. We make amends, if possible, to those people who we have harmed in word or deed. And if we cannot, we can do daily prayers or metta practice, or make sure we do not do the same thing over again that we did with them. And then, going forward, we endeavor not to harm ourselves or others. In other words, we do our best not to make the same mistakes again, to be able to step back and, in a sense of wisdom, which we'll talk about next week, in a sense of wisdom, being able to say, oh, I see where I made that mistake. I see where I harmed someone without intending to do it, but that I need to be able to, if possible, forgive and be forgiven. But if we do make a mistake, if we do something wrong, we acknowledge it immediately, and then we apologize if possible. And then, over time, we also learn how to forgive ourselves. Because oftentimes in the world of recovery, I've noticed that there's a tendency to try to forgive others or be forgiven, but we do not have the means to forgive ourselves. Because at the base of it, we are told or shared with that we are shameful and therefore beyond redemption. I don't think that's part of our religious tradition. So given the nightmare that we're going on with in this country and in the world right now, is it possible for Americans to move forward towards forgiveness and reconciliation? Are we able to move beyond the very deep racial divide in this country? Are we able to move beyond the powerlessness that women still feel, that people in the LGBTQ plus community still feel, that people who have been shamed for many years on the margins of society, can we move beyond harming them? I don't know. I do believe that religious communities like this one can show the way to wholeness and healing, but without any one orthodoxy or creed or statement that you must believe us and ignore everyone else. And in summation, as Annie Lamott said in the opening words, you don't have time to carry grudges. You don't have time to cling to the need to be right. And I would say that that is true for me, perhaps for all of us here, but certainly a gift to be reminded that we are not the center of the world and always right. So let's make an effort not to cancel people or institutions, and certainly not to cancel individuals, because we do not know their whole story. If we must say to a person, like we did to Noah Levine, this was a wrong, unjust, inappropriate action on your part, and then it is up to them to figure out how to respond. Do you respond by saying, yes, I'm sorry, and I'll make amends? Or do they respond, no, I'm not going to, because I don't think I did anything wrong? That is up to them, not up to us. I think part of our job is to help people find that path to reconciliation and wholeness, because for all we know, we might get canceled next. Let's just take a few moments of quiet. I would simply note as one last almost theological thought is that our universalism, which is part of our heritage, said for hundreds of years, no one is beyond redemption. And that is part of our theology as well.